From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Heads up for fishermen getting relief checks for the 2016 pink salmon disaster. Some of the calculations are off, and there is a limited time in which to appeal to get the correct amount of money. Are massive wrecks of seabirds dying off this summer another sign that all is not well with Alaska's oceans? We have a report, but like scientists say, there are no answers yet. Seafood industry leaders met recently at the Southeast Conference in Sitka to hear about the state of seafood production in Alaska. Some of the challenges, environmental changes, and trade wars. There's something special about a NOAA nautical chart. The large paper charts are the stuff of dreams and have been a necessary part of navigation for oceangoers. Now they are going on a trip to the recycle bins of history, as NOAA announces it plans to phase out physical charts in favor of electronic ones. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
If you got or are expecting a check from the 2016 pink salmon disaster, you may want to double check your total against the payout plan to make sure that you got the correct amount of money. As Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch reports, there are problems with calculations in some instances. So much so that Kodiak Representative Louise Stutz is advising fishermen to get their appeals in early before the money runs out.
Alaska salmon permit holders who are applying now for nearly $32 million in federal relief funds from the 2016 pink salmon run failure are facing another snarl. The way in which the payouts were calculated appears badly flawed.
A portion of the problem is nobody saw the final plan before it was released.
Representative Louise Stutz of Kodiak has watchdogged the relief process from the get-go. The payouts to salmon permit holders in seven regions are based on average dockside values over even years, starting in 2006. Formulas were calculated by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and approved by NOAA Fisheries. Stutz points to flaws based on the timing of entry into a salmon fishery and participation in other unrelated fisheries.
If you bought your permit in 2014 or 2012 and you fished it 1 year, their loss is calculated based only on those years without blending the fleet-wide average. Essentially, what that boils down to is the guy that fished pink salmon stands to get a whole lot less, and I'm talking tens of thousands of dollars less than the guy that's never fished pink salmon but was geared up to do it the year of the disaster.
Payments also are based on individual permit holders rather than individual permits.
If I fished a gillnet permit in 2012 and then later bought a seine permit that I fished in 2016, my year of gillnetting will be used to establish a five-year average to base my loss on for the 2016 seine year. I mean, it's just nuts.
Skippers are responsible for compiling crew data and applying through the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission by October 31st. Stutz says the distribution plan is a done deal, and agencies are on notice to expect a lot of appeals.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Massive seabird die-offs, or wrecks, as some experts call them, have happened again this summer, extending from May through August. According to the National Park Service, reports received by mid-August documented thousands of dead short-tailed shearwaters from Bristol Bay and a lower number of other types of birds found dead in the Northern Bering and Chukchi Seas. This marks the fifth year in a row Alaska has seen massive seabird mortality events.
Of all the carcasses that we've collected and sent in, and that people have examined or looked at anyway, it's starvation. The birds are dying of starvation.
Kathy Kulitz, is the Seabird Section Lead for Alaska with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She says scientists still can't determine why hundreds and hundreds of birds of a variety of species are washing up on Alaska's shores, starving to death. According to Kulitz, they cannot rule out that the possibility of toxins from harmful algal blooms weaken the birds, preventing them from foraging. Delbert Pangoe of Savunga has noticed similar patterns from his home on St. Lawrence Island. He says before this season's die-off began, the cliffs on the east side of the island used to be a seabird spectacle.
Just from our village, we could hear all those wings beating, going around and around. It just blackened the sky. The auklets, the lesser auklets, the myrrhbirds. And it's so amazing that when you go to the cliffs yourselves, you know, they're flying right by you. It's amazing how you would think that they would collide together, but they don't.
Pangoe gets emotional as he describes what he has seen at the same location this summer.
To see our cliffs empty, no more spectacle. I think the best way I could put it, because I walked to the cliffs and my heart just sank. Ghostly eerie to not see this like it used to be.
He suspects some species of birds, like the lesser auklets, moved farther north to find new feeding grounds instead of staying on St. Lawrence Island this summer. Panguli says he has also observed some birds abandoning their chicks in order to survive, leaving the nest to have a chance to produce more offspring next year.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Seafood industry leaders met in Southeast Alaska recently to get an update on the status of Alaska seafoods. Nicole Kimball is the vice president of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. That's a nonprofit group that represents the interest of processors across the state. They ship over 1 billion pounds of seafood south every year. She said salmon make up 53% of the value of fish harvested in Southeast. But the harvest numbers were down this year for pinks and chums.
Those returns were just flat out disappointing this year.
Over the last decade, she said the chum harvest has averaged around 10 million salmon. And even with the late bump in chum, the harvest was still low, at just over 7 million. She said the region is on track for its pink harvest, but that's not saying much this year.
We're meeting the forecast or just above the forecast, but that forecast wasn't high to begin with.
And of all the risks the industry faces, two rose to the top of her list: climate change and trade wars.
Tariffs imposed, particularly by the U.S. and China, have a direct effect on the markets where we can sell seafood. So we're obviously trying to expand those markets as much as possible. One of the biggest new opportunities we saw was this huge middle class in China that eat a lot of different kinds of fish. So we were looking to really push Alaska seafood into their domestic market there. But with the new tariff situation, that's just not possible.
Kimball said now the Pacific Seafood Processors Association was looking instead to expand to South Korea and markets that eat fish that aren't as popular in the United States.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, AMSEA, at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
And finally this week, it may be a few years down the road, but the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the agency that prints nautical charts for mariners, will be phasing out hard copy charts in favor of electronic ones. KDLL's Jay Barrett has more.
Last week, when the board of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council was in Kenai for a quarterly meeting, a small section of the report by a NOAA representative about phasing out hard copy marine charts was met with some surprise and a little bit of nostalgia.
It is definitely a big deal. We've got over 200 years of creating paper charts. It's our bread and butter. And for us to sort of take a look at making this shift is a huge transformation that we're evaluating.
NOAA Lieutenant Bart Bissler said the agency has just started the planning to eventually do away with paper charts aboard marine vessels.
We see it needs to happen with a more digital world, moving in that direction. It's what people are using, so it's where we need to be putting our effort to promote safe navigation. But it's something we don't take lightly. It's not a light switch we're just going to turn off and walk away from. We're just in the first stages of first acknowledging that, yes, this is something we need to do to stay current and keep meeting the needs of the mariner.
Satellite navigation is not new, but given that there's a piece of furniture in most wheelhouses just for charts, the chart table, Missler says there's still a lot of love for them.
Almost every mariner I ever talked to likes having a paper chart in the drawer. So they might not use it, but they like having it there because the power goes out, everything goes sideways, the paper chart, you can pull it out and it's always there. So there are still mariners navigating on paper charts today because they personal preference or just that's their operation. The electronics aren't cheap. So sometimes it's just an economic decision that's driving them towards staying on paper.
Retired Mariner Steve Lewis of Anchorage, who was at the RCAC meeting as a volunteer, said charts have always been more useful to him than an image on a video monitor.
The scale for me of the chart puts it into a spatial recognition in my mind, wherein I can say to myself, oh, I am getting close, or oh, I am still far away, I don't have to worry about how deep the water is here. And to be able to do that after looking at a screen that's only a few inches in dimension, I cannot conceptualize how a person can do that.
Lewis does acknowledge the benefits of electronic aids to navigation, having seen it happen before.
When I first got a sat-nav system and could move away from having to do celestial navigation, I got a lot more sleep because I was not up in the middle of the night trying to find a star in the sky in order to figure out where I was. But it also took, and this is personal, it took some of the challenge and the fun out of it for me. So, you know, an old sailor's point of view, maybe.
Missler says NOAA is at least 5 years out before any charts start becoming available in electronic form only. He says one of the big hurdles has been difficulty in creating an electric chart that prints out in as high a quality as existing paper charts. In Kenai, I'm Jay Barrett.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Davis Hovey at KNOM in Nome, Catherine Rose at KCAW in Sitka, Jay Barrett at KDLL in Kenai Soldotna, and Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio. Here's a question. Is your EPIRB registration up to date? Accurate information helps the Coast Guard know whose signal has gone off, and it gives onshore contact information. That little bit of extra info could make all the difference in the amount of time it takes rescuers to find you. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.